Well, it wasn't a chicken, but it was a live bird of sorts. Maybe that will satisfy the baseball gods and get Cleveland going on the right track. Maybe if that bird had just stayed in the sky, except for Mike Zeno's at bat, he would have lived. Going on the ground against being on the ground as a bird against the Guardians, as the Worms have found out this year, bad idea. But maybe the bird dying can help the Guardians live.
You are Locked On Guardians, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Guardians, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I want to take a moment and say this episode is brought to you by Game Time. Download the Game Time app. Create an account, use the code LOCKEDONMLB for $20 off your first purchase. Last minute tickets, those prices guaranteed. Also want to say that is our second bird killed in, 2 weeks in baseball. Apparently this is Stephen King's The Birds. Interesting time over there. It's Justin, I am Jeff. I want to thank you for making Locked On Guardians your first listen today and every day, wherever it is that you get podcasts. And we do have a new iTunes review, so I did want to go ahead and send a thank you out to Sizemore24, who I feel like has left a review before. I think if you change the review, you sometimes pop up again. Just worried if this team isn't very good. We'll save that for the mailbag, Sizemore24. I want to say this. We spent the last 24 hours, myself included, with a lot of hand-wringing and anger about various choices and decisions. And the great humor / irony of baseball sometimes just presents itself. And if there was a subset that were very mad that Gavin Williams wasn't called up and we went with Hunter Gaddis, as that same subset was very mad when Bo Naylor was sent back down to the minors. And basically because those two guys stayed here, the Guardians win today because they're the two biggest stars in this one. If you listen to my now, I gave my third star to Gabby Arias, but Gaddis, this was another brilliant start for him. He had that one against Oakland. So that's two really strong starts. I still think he's probably a reliever long-term, but good for him in this one. And then for Zunino, I mean, he needed that, but I've talked about dude is streaky. So watch, he might go the other way starting at this point on.
Yeah. Who knows? We'll take it where you can get him. I think they said after the game, he was like 1-for-31 or something like that. So he's got an infield hit and a home run his last two at bats, whatever. And he threw a runner out. I mean, the home run was big, obviously, the way things, who knows how things would have turned out, but the way things did end up, it was, the 2-1 run that Arias scored on the wild pitch was enough, sadly. That was the first run of the game, but yeah, he threw a runner out trying to steal. So that was huge. Definitely needed that. I mean, everything today was pretty much all thumbs up for Zunino.
Coming up, Milhouse.
That one's over my head. That's good.
Simpsons reference.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't watched Simpsons. See if they do a prediction on birds or sacrificing birds in baseball. Hunter Gaddis, though, you're right. Good game. Congrats to him. I didn't realize this, which probably should have realized it, but that was his first career win. And I know.
I didn't know until you told me, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I mean, pitcher wins. We know pitcher wins are bogus. It is what it is. But I mean, in the 70s and 80s, when guys were going, 7, 8, 9 innings regularly, it did mean something because you were the one pitching the whole game. So it was on you or it wasn't. Well, unless the hitters didn't hit, but any more pitcher wins are obviously stupid, but it's still good for them when they get the win. It's still, and it wasn't like a win where, he won because the offense bailed him out or because the, not like a reliever win where you give up a blown save and get a win, the vulture, but still a nice, ball to put on your mantle. It was my first career win. It's a nice little
thing. And he changed it up too. That's, if you want like an encouraging sign for him, like this wasn't like what we saw when he was up here last. Like if you want an encouraging sign for like overall development and just like working with pitchers, like he kind of came up and had a different game plan than we saw when he was up before, which is what you want to see. And we'll get into it later. He wasn't the only pitcher who changed their game plan in this one.
Yes.
And we talked about like making coaching adjustments. This game we saw the beginning and the end. Coaching adjustments, player adjustments, and Gaddis was a different usage of his pitches. Like, we've talked about that change ball is maybe his best pitch, but he was not using it as much in this one. And for a guy who's had some command issues, he really commanded the fastball tonight.
He commanded the slider really good, too. I mean, he threw the slider six times, called strikes. That's huge. When you can throw your secondary stuff for strikes, it just makes everything so much better.
Guys, it gives him a legit third pitch, which, I mean, I've always said, I didn't think he had a third pitch. I didn't think that slider was good enough.
I didn't either. It's gotten better. I mean, I'm still kind of waiting to see the fastball, like, hit a higher gear, because there was a point last year in AA where he was throwing, like, 95, 97.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting to see that hit, because he hit 95 tonight for the first time. So I'm still waiting to see a little more on him. But for whatever reason, his fastball worked a little better tonight. Like, guys swung and missed a little more off that. But I think it had to do, though, because he was throwing, again, six called strikes in the slider, only one for the fastball. Because guys were swinging and missing at the fastball, or they were fouling it off. Yeah, he didn't use the changeup as much, although I would probably say that was probably more to a circumstance, because the White Sox had, what, one, two, three, four, five,
it was almost
six right-handers in the lineup. So, you know, he's not going to use the changeup a lot right on right, although it's good. It's a good enough pitch. Sometimes you get that ball that just goes right in the hitter's bat path and you do that. So, yeah, if that gives him a third pitch, that's a big deal. And I still think those three pitches are enough to make him a solid reliever. Because anymore, I mean, we'll talk about this with Class A. Like, even relievers need more than two pitchers these days, just with how good hitters get, or just the information you can get off guys. But, yeah, super impressive start. Probably the best of Gattis's career.
I will say what's interesting in this start is that his four-seam fastball on average was half a mile an hour faster, but his changeup was nearly a mile and a half faster. And that cutter that has not been a good pitch, he barely threw.
Well, the thing with the cutter and the slider, though, is he says it's the same pitch. They have this pitch that Cleveland teaches a lot of guys. Tanner Burns throws it, and some other guys throw it. Gattis does, and I think Cantillo does, too. It's like a hybrid cutter-slider where they can manipulate it depending on how hard they want to throw it and where they want to throw it. So it's essentially the same pitch, and I don't think StatCast does a very good job of differentiating
it's interesting that his, like, his RPMs were up as well, as was his velocity on his, but, like, he was
better. And he cut his hair. He couldn't do a 99 where he went couldn't grab at his hair.
His changeup was up 289 rotations per minute, and the fastball was 147. Like, that doesn't seem like a lot, but then when you consider, like, 2000 is good, when you're talking about 150, that's a lot. And that explains why that fastball worked better.
Yeah, if you can get it over 2,200, you're in a better spot. Yeah,
his max was 24 and his min was 2,139. So he was sitting 2,200 with that fastball most of the time, which is huge. His average was 2,300, which is not what we've seen all year.
All year, it's been below 2,200. That 2,200 mark, I think, sometimes
is important. 2,300, which is, again, why is he successful?
But I just think throwing that slider for strikes was a big deal for him, because it made them late on the fastball. They had to respect that he could throw the slider for strikes. They had to look for it, and they swung and missed that a lot too. So,
and he threw that 30
spot start
30 times. They didn't have enough data for yearly averages on that pitch. He had three starts this year. And he wasn't using that slider at all. So it's almost like a brand new weapon. They don't have any yearly data for it because he wasn't using it.
That could have been a big deal too. The White Sox may have not seen that slider. Cause remember, he made his major league debut, or, you know, he made his second year start of his career last year against them, and it was a disaster. So they may not have seen that slider. And I think the other thing too with him is he was throwing a few more strikes, I think. And he just wasn't getting into counts where he could use his off-speed stuff. Like, that's the problem. You don't establish the fastball early, and he was throwing some other stuff too, but yeah, good in a spot start, just what you needed. I mean, about as good as you could expect. The White Sox lineup is okay. They're not great. They're good. But really nice for him. And we'll talk about Class A here before we hit to the next segment. But the other thing I want to talk about too is, and I've been saying this all along, I'm not going to, you know, sprain my shoulder, pat myself on the back for this, cause I think this is obvious, but the more and more Gabby Arias plays, the more comfortable he looks at the plate. Yep. Like I've said, this is not a guy offensively who can sit for a week and just come in and hit the ball or play well. Like, he's not chasing as much now. He had two walks. I know he didn't get a hit tonight, but he had a 107 mile an hour ground out.
He had the hardest ball of the game. Second hardest.
No, he had the hardest. It was 107. It was the hardest of the game.
Okay. I know two walks is still reaching base twice. And, like, he was able to do enough with his legs to get a run across. So I think it's a highly productive game, no matter how you look at it.
It is, especially for him, because I know the last couple of weeks we've harped on launch angle, and actually they don't have the launch angle on StatCast about where it was. But it doesn't matter. It was a ground out, so it was bad. It was a bad launch angle. But the fact that you're seeing this guy, and it says it has a 450 expected batting average, so who knows? It's not the greatest for a ball in play, but it's good. But yeah, it just looks like he's more comfortable in his approach when he's playing more often. Whereas Tyler Freeman, I know everyone wants him to play more. I still think he is a guy who can play once a week and still, you know, hit a laser double down the right field line or get a hit or two and play okay. Like, I think his game is just more suited for that. But I think it's good they're finding ways to, they gave, you know, Naylor the night off because of the hamstring, and he didn't, just to give him a blow. They said it wasn't because it was hurting, but just because of doubleheader and all that. But it's good they're finding ways to get Arias in there, because I think he is getting more comfortable offensively. That's a guy who needs to see a lot of pitches and to work on his offensive approach. He doesn't have an approach that allows him to play sparingly. So I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, I mean, he is, when you look at what he has done, the two home runs stand out, but like, he's getting on base. And, you know, it does feel like Freeman can fall out of bed and hit a 108 mile an hour line drive that or could grounder. Be a single.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, he can do that. And I think, again, he could be a solid starter as well. But I think when you look at what Gabby does defensively, I go back to Saturday's game where he threw that great, you know, threw the guy out.
Right field.
You know, it's like he's got that strong arm. I would love to see him at shortstop just because of the defensive issues there. But I think he is the walks and the power. This team needs power. He might be one of their four best power hitters.
Yeah,
might be top three.
And he's not going to get to it unless he plays more. Yeah. That's the thing. We don't know. The question with him is always, will he get to it? And he's got to play more, I think, to do it. He's not a guy who can just come in and hit the ball over the fence once a week. He's not, and he's not a lefty platoon matcher either. That's the thing, is that has been his role miscast all year because they don't have a guy like that, but it's just not necessarily the best role. Okay, we got to talk about Class A's Arsenal changes as well. We're going to do our daily base running check-in, some other catcher comments, the Bo Naylor situation, tomorrow's pitching matchups, news on rehabbing and injured guys, all coming up here in just a moment.
So I'm having a lot of fun with one of our sponsors, So Rare. I just set my lineups today. In the last week, I've unlocked Martin Perez. And who's my other unlock? I'm just having a complete shutdown. Mauricio Dubon. So what's nice about this is you set a lineup, three games later, you get a reward. You almost always get one card, maybe two. And it's just fun to collect them and look at them. And I just have a lot of fun as it being low stakes fantasy. You can collect as many cards as you want. They got rid of the max on that, so it's a fun time. I am enjoying So Rare. I look forward to my little unlock every week. So, you know, go check it out for yourself. It's a low stress, fun activity if you like baseball, and then you get little cards. And I remember collecting cards as a kid. That's kind of fun. So head to sorare.com/lockedon. That's spelled SORARE.com to draft your team a free player card. Set your lineup and start competing today to win epic rewards. Again, that's sorare.com/lockedon to start playing today. And as we always say, go check out our old friend, Alex Hooper, who is a So Rare guru.
Absolutely. Go check out that. And then don't forget, on Tuesday night, as you're listening to this on SiriusXM, you can catch Tom Hamilton and Jim Rosenhaus on the hometown call for Guardians and White Sox at 6:10. Okay. Hopefully, Hammy and Rosie will be talking about another Emmanuel Clase save Tuesday night. You and I and other people have been asking, too, what on earth is happening with Emmanuel Clase? So confusing. I've got a funny bit, because I was actually at the game tonight, so I've got a funny bit on this from a jersey I saw. But Arsenal tonight, more sliders than cutters. We've been trying to find what is happening with him. And I looked at like his heat map or the pitch kind of graph, and it just seemed like he was throwing more cutters over the plate versus on the outside third of the plate. You know, like I said, into lefties and outside to righties, but tonight a very, very different approach, and it worked really good for him.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think he had become predictable, and, you know, it's the same thing we talked about. Hey, apparently the slider is the future to this team's success.
Yeah.
You know, that's the pitch. Cause that was, again, you know, him throwing that in those situations, you know, and especially after the rough run, it's nice to have a positive outcome with him there. I mean, Stappen was great. Sandlin was great. Henches is still working off the rust. It wasn't ideal there, But I mean, one could argue that Henches had about the roughest performance in the pen and didn't give up an earned run. So that's a net win for sure.
And the only ball he let a lot in play was a little, you know, looper too that just got over him and as his glove. So it's not like he allowed a hard contact. The walk was the big thing for him. But I mean, when you have when you're a two pitch guy like Class A, like he only has, you know, I guess you can technically say he has a four seam, but he doesn't throw that often. It's hard as a reliever. I mean, that's why even as a start, like as a starter, you need three pitch. I think as a reliever, you almost do too, but you got to vary. And I think a lot of guys too, I don't know, when you're a reliever, do you think that, you know, you're still going to a scouting report on guys, obviously, like you're not going to throw, you know, a sinker to a guy that crushes sinkers. Right. But when you're a guy like Class A, who really has two pitches and you're going out there and you're just trying to get three or four outs at max. You know, how much are you trying to pitch to a scouting report versus, and maybe this is for any pitcher, how much are you trying to go out there and just throw your best stuff? Like, the scouting report does matter. Like, there are certain areas of the plate you're not going to throw, you know, Luis Robert a cutter or a fastball or something, I guess. But, like, when you have two pitches like that, I guess you're just trying to go out there and throw your best stuff, and often maybe his cutter is his best pitch, but maybe that makes him predictable. Maybe that's why the slider was good. And I think the same reason that the Gaddis went with the slider tonight too was the right-handed lineup, but it really worked against the White Sox. So I don't know if that was necessarily in the game plan, but maybe it's something. I don't know how his slider is against lefties. Maybe it's something to consider going forward.
Yeah, it worked tonight. Might as well like have something in there that's gonna shake things up. I think it's a good call for him. I do want to take a second before we transition to the rest. I told Justin I was going to do this, and he's like, why? I just want to give a shout-out to a Ohio pitcher, Jesse Schlottens, who pitched well on the other side. Listen, he's from Arizona originally, but he went to Wright State, got the lowest bonus I've ever seen, was a $1,000 bonus to San Diego. I've never seen anyone get lower than like $5,000 before. So for that guy to get that bonus where it's just like, here, you can take $1,000 so we can give that money to someone else, work his tail off and pitch in the majors, good on Jesse Schlottens. I'm glad they won. But
was Sean Murphy his catcher at White State?
At points, yes.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
I believe there would have been overlap. Well, let me change that. I just want to confirm that. That might be wrong because I'm not sure. He started out at University of Arizona before he transferred over. So I want to see if they
I don't think anybody's going to go fact-checking you on that. Because most people listening to the show aren't going to know that. I didn't know that.
I believe yes. Wow. I believe yes.
All right. Well, Jeff's checking that out just to confirm. Let's do our daily base running check-in because we seem to be talking about base running every podcast now because it's a big deal for this team right now because they have to
yes, run the bases. They were the same draft class.
Wow, look at that. Okay. So you probably would have seen him because I know you watched a lot of Sean Murphy when he was in the Wright State. So you would have seen him at some point, I'm sure.
Yep, I was more interested in Ryan Weiss, who Arizona took, and that I don't think that worked out. But easy velocity there.
So Cleveland, they did go for a double steal, and I texted you this. I texted a couple people this. I said Zunino was at the plate, and it was Brennan and Arias on first. Arias is on second. Brennan's on first after that. After he killed that bird. If you didn't understand the cold open and didn't watch the game, Will Brennan hit a little. Not soft line. It was a hard hit. It was a 100-mile-an-hour ball, so it killed the bird. I didn't see who cleaned it up because I was at the game, but the base hit did kill the bird. So he's on first. Arias is on second, and they didn't double steal with Zunino at the plate. And I was like, why did they not, you know, double steal with Zunino at the plate? That's what I was waiting for. And they finally did it with Straw, and Brennan was thrown out at second. So you know, whatever. Or no, was it Rosario? Okay, it looks like. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Maybe it was. Did they give Arias third base? Had to be Arias, because Rosario did steal a base. Brennan got caught stealing. All right, whatever it is. Whatever happened to be the issue. So they tried to pull off a double steal, and Will Brennan's knocked down at second. No, because Arias scored the run. All right, I don't know how that got accounted for. Anyway, I thought they did it a batter too late, but it was good to see. Still didn't run enough. I mean, I guess the guys who were on – you know, Kwan was on once, didn't try to steal a base. Rosario was on once. He looks like he did try to steal, and he did. Brennan, yes. Arias, yes. Straw did not get on base. So I guess the guys who got on base that should be stealing, I guess, attempted to, except for Kwan. But Kwan also got himself picked off, or not picked off. He got doubled off a second. I don't know how that guy, of all people, lost track of how many outs there were in that inning. That was really super goofy. So double steal didn't work. They did a batter too late. They got lucky that a wild pitch was thrown and Arias was able to score, because they wouldn't have gotten that first run home anyway. But you know, I hope the double steal was the right call. I just hope we see more of it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
All right, well, we still have to talk about the bone hitter situation and catching and some other stuff, rehabs, in just a moment. I did not have to buy tickets to Monday night's game. I already had them, but you do not need to stress out about buying tickets for any upcoming event in the area. There are lots of comedy shows, concerts. If you're still trying to get Taylor Swift tickets, who knows what you're trying to get right now. I bought Jonas Brothers tickets. I didn't buy Taylor Swift tickets. I didn't go that route. But you can browse with the Game Time app to find upcoming events in your area. They have image views of seats, flash deals, and last-minute tickets on every event, sports, concert, theater, comedy, all those kinds of things. So snag tickets, not the stress of Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account. And if you use the code LOCKEDONMLB, you will get $20 off of your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code LOCKEDONMLB for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. And then on SiriusXM on Tuesday night, hometown call, Guardians and White Sox. That will be 6:10. It'll be Dylan Cease and Logan Allen. That was the matchup last Wednesday, was the Guardians avoided being swept by the White Sox. Hopefully it'll be two in a row for the White Sox. Or I'm sorry, the Guardians, not the White Sox. In that matchup, they'll do well again. Okay, do you want to talk about some rehab stuff real quick, or do you want to?
Yeah, no, I think that's the best way. We got a lot of MASH report, as they say.
Right? Yeah, the MASH report, team injury. So Tristan McKenzie and Aaron Savali are both going to go on rehab assignments again this week, their second time, I believe. Savali is Tuesday as you're listening to this, and then Thursday is going to be McKenzie. So here's the deal. They have an off day Thursday. They don't need a fifth starter again until, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, the 30th at Baltimore. Tristan McKenzie is able to be off the IL by then. He would be on normal rest that day. I don't necessarily know if it's going to be him. I know Anthony said pregame they were talking about wanting to get these guys stretched out. So maybe it could be Hunter Gaddis one more time. I don't know. It won't be Hunter Gaddis more than the next time. I will say that. Yeah. These two guys are definitely coming back, whether it's this next, whether they do two starts or three starts in rehab. I'm inclined to think they will do three, but we'll see how this second rehab start goes. But either way, Hunter Gaddis, you know, we hope for one more good start out of him at the most, and then he's back in AAA, which is why Kevin Williams wasn't added. Because if this was the case, because someone's like, oh, the Dodgers are bringing up, you know, Gavin Stone and Bobby Miller. Well, yeah, because Julio Urias is out for weeks, who knows, and they have somebody else on the IL out for weeks as well. So they didn't have anybody else. They knew there was going to be a long-term injury situation, whereas they knew Savali and McKenzie were
back soon.
And we can get into the Gavin Williams debate even deeper on Thursday when we talk about the minor leagues. But
And that Dodgers team is already beat to heck. Like, just a quick note on their injuries. Walker Buehler, Michael Grove, Dustin May, Ryan Pepiot, Pepiot, Julio Urias, JP Fires, and Daniel Hudson, Jimmy Nelson, Alex Reyes had shoulder surgery again. Remember how we
wanted him. Yeah, you and I both wanted
Alex Reyes. And Blake Trahan. Like, I mean,
Blake Trinan. Yeah.
Trinan. Yeah, like that, those guys. Like, yeah, they added FireEyes and knowing he was hurt, but the rest of that list?
Well, I mean, they knew Alex Reyes was hurt too, but yeah, it's a mess. Well,
didn't he come? I don't think we knew he was going to need another shoulder surgery. Cleveland's difference is, they're three guys. One of them we're going to talk about in a moment here. There are three guys who are all nearing some degree of returning to action.
Yeah, thank goodness. Cody Morris, there was nothing on him finally, so he threw a bullpen in Cleveland. The next step for him is kind of to be determined. They don't know if it's going to be as a starter or reliever right now. I would be inclined to say reliever at this point in the season, because I know they need starter depth, because, you know, Peyton Battenfield is now hurt, and your depth in AAA is Gaddis, Plesac, and that's about it. We'll see what happens when Savali and McKenzie come back. So I would say probably better off as a reliever. I don't know who you would send down. I mean, I would love to have Cody Morris in the bullpen and maybe send 99 down on a trip to some super glue or some sunscreen or something.
I think that could be a good role, because you're going to have to stretch him out as a starter, and that's going to take even longer. So I think it's relief. I do think, and if you listen to the broadcast, which you didn't because you were at the game, they talked about, you know, the role being undefined for him, that they're going to kind of see how it goes. They were comparing it to Garrett Crochet. When Crochet was pitching is when they started to talk about Cody Morris. And that's when Andre brought it up. And no matter what's going to happen, he's going to help this team. I think before his injury, Zips listed him as like, you know, potentially their third best starter going into this year. And what did we talk about yesterday? They have the third lowest amount of strikeouts of any starting pitching staff. What does Cody Morris do? Strike dudes out.
I have loved Cody Morris since, I don't know, 2018, I think, since he made his first minor league appearance. I was not really following the draft super heavy, so I wasn't knowing him at the time. But first time I saw him, I was super impressed. And he's only gotten better since then. He just hasn't gotten healthier. And again, we've talked about it in the preseason too, just spring training. We said that there was no guarantee that being a reliever keeps him healthy. You just got to be manage his usage and, you know, keep an eye on his body and see what happens. But he could definitely help his team no matter what he decides to do. It could be sooner if it's a bullpen role. But I'm excited to see Cody Morris pitch again. He's one of the better pitchers in the system for the last several years. It sucks he's still a prospect because he's been around long enough here.
Yeah, it's only due to health.
It is. I know. He's a 26-year-old prospect, which that's wild. Okay, real quick, do you want to get into the catcher comments? Because Bo Naylor was here and then he was gone and there's a lot of questions today about Bo Naylor.
Listen, I think it probably says enough about where they kind of view Bo Naylor that, like, yesterday's game, you know, he barely got in them. That they're not it's very clear they don't. Yeah, but I mean, I think it's clear they don't view him as ready yet. And, you know, Tito was very quick to kind of talk about his issues throwing guys out this year.
But it's been a mix of things with that, I will say, just from the video I've seen. It's been a mix. It's been mechanical. Yeah. You know, just some
of the pitching, too.
Yes, it's been on the pitching as well. So, I mean, it's half and half, and most times it's pitchers. And look, he's also working with Daniel Norris, and he's working with, you know, Yan Romero, and just some random dudes. Michael Kelly, although Michael Kelly's been interested. We should talk about him Thursday. You're catching a lot of random dudes in AAA that don't have big league stuff for a reason, or they don't succeed in the big leagues for a reason. So that plays into it. You know, he's releasing the ball a little too late, a little too early, and there's been weird things. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal throwing for him long term. And the question, you know, people talked about, this is what people got mad in Anthony's comments saying, like, oh, you know, we don't define him as ready or not because development happens at the big league level or whatever. And people got mad at that, saying it meant nothing, but it does. Like, we've talked about it. Big development continues to big league level. Development has continued for Logan Allen, for Tanner Bibee, for all these guys. It continues. You still finish off your development at the big league level. And people are saying, well, he can't develop at the big league level if he's not here. And I agree with that. I think I'm starting to come around to the side that it has less to do with him and has more to do with just trying to see how much longer they can go with Zunino. And my other side of this, too, is, okay, let's say you decide to jettison Zunino and you just go with Gallagher as the backup and you let Naylor play. If Naylor falters, like look back at Andre Jimenez in 2021. He came here, he had a hot spring training. They tried to put him at shortstop and Rosario in center because they thought that was the best move. And look, right now it probably would be the best move, although they didn't have Miles Straw at the time. And then they had to send Jimenez back down because he struggled. And he came back in 2022, was a much better player, and now it's, you know, a mess. God only knows there. What if that happens to Bo Naylor? Like, it's one thing to send a shortstop or a second baseman down because you had other options, even though 2021 was an ugly year. If you have, and a lot of guys have to go back to the minors after their first stint in the majors, okay? The good ones, even, too.
I don't think, though, you can make that is the reason. Like, if no, you're I'm expecting not him to fail, I honestly think what we have seen them with Bibee, with Allen, with everyone else, that if they feel that someone's ready to go, they'll call him up. Like, see, I didn't think they would go to Bibee.
They were forced into that.
To a degree. I mean, they're not forced into the current situation with Naylor, with his bad as the catching's been. I mean, I think one could argue that they could be. I think that they think there's stuff to work on there. I legitimately think that there is so much under the hood that we can't measure. Like I talked about last week. I think, you know, it doesn't matter if you've called a guy once or twice. There is, you know, there's a few years ago, there was an attempt, and listen, people bring up that catching ERA stuff, it's junk stats, like that doesn't matter. But there were some interesting things about like who are good pitch handlers And, you know, like, it was interesting. I think we talked about it. Like you said, I think it was maybe through you, and it's like Sandy Leon and Austin Hedges and all these guys who came through Cleveland that someone tried to quantify. And it turned out like all of them were Cleveland catchers. So there is something that this team quantifies that maybe we can't see, or that I've only seen one person attempt to quantify. And I think if he was ready, he'd be here. I honestly believe that. I don't think it's about like a fear of him not, because if he fails and he goes back down, you're in the same situation you were before. And if you call him up and he's
great, but if you call him up and you jettison Zunino and you send him down, who's your starting catcher? Cam Gallagher?
Well, no, I don't think you jettison Zunino. I think in that case, it's Cam Gallagher who's gone.
And you tell Mike Zunino, guess what? You're playing backup now?
And he'll collect his money. And he always, I mean, he knew what he signed up for. This was not a job that was supposed to be the whole year of his. Like, you know, that when he came in, he knew that there was a chance he would lose the job to the rookie.
See, I still think it's a money thing, because even Tito said, because of our payroll, we have to be more patient. And I think they don't want to do it too early in the season where it's not working.
Like, it's also a great excuse.
It is an excuse, but we've seen them do this before. I mean, there's been a lot of times they haven't moved guys because of what they're paying them.
But, you know, at the same time, it's not exactly the same amount, but I mean, they moved on from Plesak in a hurry, even though they're playing him.
Okay, that was years though, and catcher isn't the same as pitching. Because
no, I know, but I'm just
you have five starters, you only have one catcher, and that catcher is super important.
Like I said, I think
Plesak wore out his welcome.
Yeah, I think if I honestly think if by all their metrics they thought he was ready, with as bad as catching has been in the last month, he would be up. Gallagher would be gone. There's no reason to keep Gallagher, and then. Like I said, Zunino knew that this could come. This was something that I'm sure they talked with him about, and that, you know, they would, you know, he'd probably still play versus lefties because that's what he does well. I don't think it's about managing anything. I think it's just like, I think they still, you know, they were dead set on Naylor not being ready, and I don't think May is all of a sudden going to have made him ready.
It's not.
And I know
May is not going to make him ready, but guess what? It doesn't matter. They signed Zunino to not have to have Naylor up this early.
Yes, because they didn't view him. They thought that it was going to take. They didn't want him to be
right. So no matter how good or bad Zunino is, the plan was always not to bring Naylor up this early. Yes. And so there was that's not saying he's not up because he's not ready. The plan, no matter he could be ready right now, and they wouldn't bring him up anyway.
No, see, I think they would. I honestly think if he was ready,
they would have signed Zunino if that was the case. If they thought he was ready on May 23rd,
no.
If they thought he would be ready on May 23rd to start every day,
no,
they wouldn't have signed Zunino.
No, I agree with you. But I think if he was ready now, I think they'd go ahead and make that move. I don't think there's really anything holding him back from cutting Cam Gallagher. I don't think there's anything holding him back from lessening Zunino's playing time. They are paying him, but so what? They can pay him to be in a role that, like, he's been in a split role throughout his career. He's in a split role with Tampa.
Like, I don't think there was ever a world where he was going to be out of here before June anyway.
No, but what. I think again, like, they did not think that that Naylor was going to be like, whatever their basic ready is, whatever they want him to be able to do to handle the staff. I think that they don't view it as here yet. And they put such a high standard on what that is, that is why we've
Zunino's not meeting that standard.
It's all that other stuff that we don't know. It's under the hood.
There's no questioning Bo Naylor's like work ethic or
makeup. No, not at all.
Yeah. So that's not the issue here. No, I don't know. Just, I still think even whenever Naylor's time does come, I could see them sticking with Gallagher as the third string guy.
No, they're going to totally run three catchers.
Yeah, they'll move David Fry back down, and they'll bring up. But yeah, I still don't see it coming before.
It's 100% going to be three catchers.
Yeah, I don't see it before the end of June at earliest. Okay, we got to get out of here. Logan Allen, Dylan Cease on Tuesday. George Valera is back on the IL in Columbus. They're hoping it's a minor hamstring strain, but they're still in the process of setting a timeline.
Are he and Aaron Civale long-lost brothers? God. Just because they're both made of glass?
I said in their podcast I do. I'm just worried.
Shout it out so people can find it.
All right. If you like podcasts that just focus on the Guardians minor league system only, it's Guardians of the Future. I usually do it once a week with a rotating cast of hosts. And we just spend, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour only talking about the Guardians minor league. So if you want more minor league talk, you can go check out Guardians of the Future. But I said there, I just worry that this is going to be a theme throughout Valera's career, because it has been so far. That's always nothing major. Like, the handmade surgery is not great, but there's all that's not like a long-term terrible thing. He's never like torn ACL, knock on wood, anything crazy.
The wrist injuries tend to keep happening. Like, that is a reoccurring injury.
But he's always had these little dings and dents throughout his career.
And he's had three wrist injuries, right?
Yeah, two hamstrings, a core muscle injury. It's just little things that pop up. I don't know. I just worry that some guys are like that. You know, like Byron Buxton. I know he's had some more devastating ones. Valera hasn't had quite that level, but I just worry that some guys that just happens to. I don't know.
Thank you all for listening, being part of the Locked On Guardians team. I know Sizemore 24, I think we said, is one of our everydayers, because I'm pretty sure, like I said, that's multiple comments.
Sizemore from matters.
Him. If you can help us get Grady Sizemore on the show, please DM us. Our DMs are open, at least mine are. Thank you all for listening. Remember, rate and review, and go Guardians. Go. Let's go get some more wins against this White Sox team.
Don't kill more birds.
No more animal.